disciple came to Marav Karki and said, I have been talking to people about you. Jews claim that you are a Jew. Christians revere you as one of their own saints. Muslims insist that you are the greatest of all Muslims. Maruf answered, This is what humanity says in Baghdad. When I was in Jerusalem, Jews said that I was a Christian, Muslims that I was a Jew, and Christians that I was a Muslim. What must we think of you then? Said the man. Maruf said, Some do not understand me and revere me. Others do not either, so they revile me. That is what I have come to say. You should think of me as one who has said this.
A religious man is always misunderstood. If he is not misunderstood, he will not be a religious man. The humanity lives in a non-religious attitude of life, sectarian, but not religious. So a religious man is a stranger. And whatsoever you say about him will be wrong, because you are wrong. And remember, whatsoever you say about him, I am not saying that if you say something in his favor that will be right. No. Whether you are in his favor, for him or against him, it makes no difference. Whatsoever you say will be wrong about him, until you yourself have become a religious consciousness. Before that, your reverence is false. Your condemnation is false. You may think about him as a sage, and you are misunderstood. You have misunderstood. You may think him as a sinner, and again, you have misunderstood. So the first thing to remember is, unless you are right, whatsoever you do, say, be, is going to be wrong. And a religious man is such a tremendous phenomena, such a strange phenomena, that you have no language to talk about him. All your words are futile in concern with him. Your whole language is useless, meaningless. Because a religious man is religious because he has gone beyond the dualities. And the whole language exists within dualities. If you say he is good, you are wrong, because he is bad also. If you say he is bad, you are wrong again, because he is good also. And now, the trouble arises, because you cannot conceive how a good man can be bad also. You can comprehend only a part of the whole, because the other part is necessarily the opposite. It has to be so. A religious man is a miniature God. Just like God, he is paradoxical and contradictory. Just like God, he is summer and winter, day and night, life and death. Just like God, he is divine and devil both. Then the mind staggers. The mind is very efficient. If you are working in polarities, if you say yes, the mind can understand. If you say no, the mind can understand. But if you say yes and no both, then it goes beyond mind. Unless you have gone beyond mind, you cannot have the feeling what a religious consciousness is. I was born a Jain. Now, religion has nothing to do with the birth. You cannot be born in a religion. Just on the contrary, religion has to be born in you. I was born a Jain. Just a coincidence. I could have been as well born a Christian or a Jew. An irrelevant fact. Because by the birth, religion cannot be given to you. It is not a gift. It is not a heritage. My father is a Jain, my mother is a Jain. They cannot give Jainism to me. I can inherit their wealth. I can inherit their prestige. I can inherit the family name, but I cannot inherit religion. Religion cannot be a gift, a heritage. It is not a thing. It is something one has to seek for himself. Nobody else can give it to you. So whatsoever is given by the earth is a sect, not a religion. Hinduism, Christianity, Mohammedanism, Jainism, Buddhism are sects, not religions. Religion is one. Sects are many. Because sects are the forms, dead fossilized forms. Sects are like footprints. Somebody someday walked there, but he is no more there. Just footprints left on the sand of time. A Buddha walks, footprints are left, and you go on worshipping for centuries those footprints. There is nobody there now, just a form in the sand. Nothing else. Sects are forms in the mind, just like footprints. Yes, somebody was there someday, but he is no more there. And you go on worshipping those forms. You are born into those forms. You are conditioned into those forms. Indoctrinated. You become a sectarian. And don't think that you have become religious, otherwise you will miss. For religion to be there, you have to seek it on your own. It is a personal growth, a personal encounter with reality, face to face, immediate and direct. It has nothing to do with tradition, nothing to do with the past. You have to grow into it. You have to allow to grow it into you. Religion is a revolution, not a conformity. It is not a conviction, intellectually attained. It is a conversion of your total being. How can you be born in a religion? Of course, you can be born in an ideology, You can learn a theology, words about God, theories about God, dogmas and doctrines. But to know about God is not to know God. The word God is not God. And all theologies together are nothing compared to a single moment of encounter with the divine. Because then for the first time the spark, your inner light starts. You start rising in a different dimension. Religion is a personal search. It is not part of society. I was born a Jain. Of course, they tried to force me to be a Jain. Fortunately, they failed. It is one of the misfortunes that they succeed in many cases. They failed and they have been angry against me. So if you ask the Jains, only rarely you will find a Jain here and there who will say that I am a Jain. Otherwise they will say that I am the enemy of Jainism and I am destroying their ideology and I am corrupting their sources. And both are right in a way. Those who say that I am against Jainism, they are right in a way, because I am against Jainism as they understand it. I am against, because that is not religion at all. A dead fossil, of course, one of the most ancient. Jainism seems to be the most ancient religion in the world. Even older than Hinduism. Because even in the Vedas, in Rig Veda, Jaina Tirthankaras are mentioned, and mentioned with deep reverence. That shows Jaina Tirthankaras are older than Rig Veda, the first Hindu scripture, the oldest in the world. And when a scripture talks about a master like the first Tirthankara of Jainas, Rishabh, the Vedas talk with so much reverence that it is almost certain that he was not a contemporary. He must have been dead at least for 1,000 years. Only then you can talk with such reverence about contemporaries. Nobody talks with such reverence. Followers can talk, but Hindus are not followers of Jains. Antagonistic religions. At least 1,000 years must have passed, and the man must have become a legend. Jainas are very old. Now historians are working on the ruins and findings in Harappa and Mohenjo-daro. And they say that there is every possibility that Harappa and Mohenjo-daro were Jaina civilizations. Before Aryans came to India, India was a Jaina country. There is every possibility. A very ancient religion, and of course, very much dead. Older religion, more dead. Everything fossilized. You cannot find more dead a person than a Jain monk. He goes on cutting his life It is a slow suicide. And the more he is dead, the more he is worshipped. Because death itself seems to be like a renunciation. If he is a little alive, then gens become afraid of him. Old religions crucify their followers, they murder. Older the religion, greater the weight, like a Himalaya on the heart of a small man, burdened, crushing, you cannot move. And traditions go on gathering, they are like ice balls, they go on gathering weight, they become fattier and fattier. Dead, but still they go on gaining weight. They become monstrous. And then they kill the spirit. They always remain true to the world. And they always more true to the world, the more poisonous to the spirit. If you ask the Jains, only few will say that, yes, this man is a real Jain. Many will say, this man is against us, the greatest enemy. And both are right in a way, and both are wrong in a deeper way. I am a Jain. If you look at Mahavir, I am a Jain. Mahavir is a religious man. Not because he is born in a religion. He searched. He inquired. He encountered reality. He threw all dogmas. He threw all civilization. Even clothes he threw away. Because they too are part of the civilization and the culture. And they too carry the society with you. He remained naked. For 12 years he completely stopped talking. Because if you go on talking, you use the language of the society. And that language carries the germs of the society. Whenever you talk, immediately you become a part of a society. A silent man is not part of any society. He may be part of nature, but he is not part of society. In fact, language is the only thing that makes you human and part of human society and human world. When you drop language, suddenly you drop out of human society and civilization. You become part of the trees, rocks, the sky. For 12 years he will not use any language. Remained completely silent. This man I love, because this is a religious man. And he started speaking only when silence was total within him. And he spoke not out of his scriptures, he spoke out of himself. He spoke out of his silence. And whenever a word is born out of deep silence, it is alive, throbbing with life. And those who hear it directly, they are most fortunate. Because soon it will die. Everything born dies. A word is born, it is alive for few moments. It throbs around you. If you can listen it, it will enter into your being. It will become part of your being. If you don't listen it, if you take notes and you think that you will try to understand it back home, it will be already dead. Then you will understand something which was not said at all. You have already made a private scripture. Mahavir spoke out of his inner silence. His words are the most wonderful ever spoken. I love that man. He is the most anti-social man you can find, and anti-traditional. Other 23 Tithankaras, of 23 masters of Jains, they were all clothed. This man became nude. Tradition has it that Jains in those days tried to deny this man. They said, what he is doing? Our other Tithankaras never have been nude, and why he is moving nude? They did everything to deny this man. And because of that denial, Jainism has divided into two parts from that very day. They have two sects. Those who followed Mahavir in his nudity, very few people, they are called Digambaras, people who believe in nudity. The other older sect, who tried to avoid this Mahavir, who tried to deny this Mahavir, they are the Swetambaras. They believe in white clothes. Their monks are white robed. And the conflict has continued. If some Jaina says that yes, this man Rajneesh is a Jaina, he is right. I love Mahavir. A rare flowering, a rare fragrance, very rare and unique. But the others are also right when they said this man is not a Jain but against them, the enemy. They are also right, because I am against tradition, against all rituals and forms, against the scriptures, against the past. I am all for religion and all against for sects. They are also right. If you ask Hindus, Hindus will say that this man is a Jain and trying to sabotage Hinduism from within. Because no Jaina has ever talked about Gita and no Jaina has ever commented on Upanishads. This man is trying from within to sabotage Hinduism. This is what the Shankaracharya of Puri says about me. That beware of this man. He is not a Hindu. And he is right in a sense. In the sense he is Hindu, I am not. But in the sense he is Hindu, Hinduism is worthless. I am a Hindu in the sense Patanjali is Hindu. Badarayana is Hindu. Kapil and Kanad are Hindu. They're really religious people. They never belong to the establishment. They cannot. It is possible the establishment may follow them, and someday around them an establishment may be created. That's possible. But they are never part of any establishment. Either of others are their own. They cannot exist in the establishment. They are free. Freedom can never be a part of any establishment. And whenever the establishment becomes too much, the freedom dies. Then the world cannot be on the wing. The wings are cut. The world has been encased then into a gold cage, beautifully decorated, very costly, precious. But now the cage is more important, not the bird. And by people will forget the world completely because the world will die. And they will go on worshipping the cage. And they will go on making it more and more decorative. And temples will arise around it. And great tradition, establishment. And nobody will bother that where is the world? A dead corpse. In a golden cage. I am a Hindu. If you believe in the Hinduism as a bird on the wing, as Upanishads are Hindu, but I am not a Hindu in the sense the Puri of Shankaracharya is Hindu, a dead bird in a golden cage. If you ask Mohammedans, they will say, I have no right to talk on Sufis or on Quran. Once in a town I was talking about Sufis, and the Maulvi of the town approached me and he said, you have no right. You are not a Mohammedan. You don't know Arabic. How can you talk on the Sufis and on the Quran? I said, Quran has nothing to do with Arabic. It has something to do with the heart and not with the language. Quran has nothing to do with the language. It has to do something with silence, not language. Quran has something to do with the reality, not with the symbols. And I am not a Mohammedan if you think that I am a follower of Muhammad. No, I am not. I am nobody's follower. But I am a Mohammedan, just like as Muhammad is a Mohammedan. Just as Jesus is a Christian, I am a Christian. But like Muhammad and Jesus. Was Muhammad a Mohammedan? How can he be? Because Mohammedanism never existed before. Was Jesus a Christ, a Christian? Christianity never existed before. How can he be a Christian? If Jesus is a Christian, I am a Christian. If Muhammad is a Mohammedan, then I am a Mohammedan. But otherwise, I am not a Mohammedan and not a Christian. A religious man does not belong to any sect. In fact, all sects belong to the religious man. But this is how the formal mind goes. He thinks in terms of ideology, language, ritual. And he misses the whole point that religion has nothing to do with these things. Then what religion is? Religion is an oceanic feeling where you are lost and only the existence remains. It is a death and a resurrection. You die as you are and you are resurrected. Totally new. Something absolutely new arises out of the death of the old. On the grave of the old, something sprouts and becomes a new flower. Religion is an inner revolution. An inner mutation. It is not in the temples, not in the mosques, not in the churches. Don't look for religion there. If you look there, you will waste your time. Look for religion in words. and the inwards you move deeper, you will find the ego there, which is the barrier. Drop that barrier and suddenly you are religious. There is only one thing which is not religious, and that is the ego, and that can never be religious. And sects never kill it. On the contrary, they strengthen it through rituals, temples, ideologies. The ego is strengthened. You go to the church and you feel that you have become religious. A subtle pride arises in you. You don't become humble. On the contrary, you become more egoistic. You do a certain ritual and you feel gratified. And you start condemning those who are not doing the ritual. You think those are the sinners and they are going to be thrown into the fire of the hell. And your heaven is secured just by doing certain rituals. Whom do you think that you are deceiving? A man sits for 1 hour turning the beads, and he is thinking his heaven is secured, and others who is not doing this stupid thing, they are going to hell. And you go to the mosque and you kneel down and you say foolish things to the divine, that you are great. Is there any doubt about it? Why you are saying that I am a sinner and you are compassion? What are you doing? Buttressing? Do you think God has an ego-like thing? So you can say who you are very great and we are very small. And you are compassion and we are sinners. Forgive us. Whom you think you are deceiving? The ego playing the game. You think God is also an ego which can be buttressed? God is not a person at all. So you are talking to yourself. There is nobody else to listen to it. Only the walls, dead walls of the mosque or the temple are a stone statue. Nobody is listening. In fact, you are doing something mad. Just in going to the madhouses and see people talking to somebody who is not there. Even those mad people are not so mad, because that somebody may be somewhere, may not be here. A madman may be talking to his wife who is not here in the madhouse, but somewhere maybe. But your God is nowhere. Your madness is deeper, greater, dangerous. How can you talk with existence? With existence you have to be silent. All talking should stop. You are not to say something. On the contrary, a prayer is a listening. You have to listen to existence, not to say something. If you say, who will listen? If you talk and you are too much involved in the words, then who will listen? And every moment there is message. Every moment from everywhere there is message for you. It is written all over. The whole existence is the scripture of the divine. The message is everywhere. On every leaf is the signature. But who will see? Your eyes and your mind is filled with yourself. Rubbish you have, but you go on rotating that rubbish in the mind. Drop it all. This is something to understand, because a prayer can be Christian, a prayer can be Hindu, a prayer can be Jewish. Then there are sectarian prayers and not prayers at all. A real prayer cannot be Christian, Hindu or Bodh, because the real prayer is just a silence awaiting. How can you say silence is Hindu? How can you say silence is Christian? Can silence be Christian or Hindu? Silence is simply silence. Neither Hindu nor Mohammedan. When two persons are absolutely silent, can you say who is Hindu and who is Mohammedan? In silence, sects disappear. In silence, societies disappear. In silence, civilizations disappear. In silence, you disappear. Only silence is. You are not there. If you are there, then silence cannot be. Because you will do something or other. You will think something or other. You will go on chattering inside. When you are not, society is not, sects are not, no words, no prayer. You are not reciting Quran, not reciting Veda, not doing a TM meditation, Ram, 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 all foolish. When you are simply silent, a meeting happens, a merger happens, you dissolve. Just as ice melts and the boundaries dissolve, and then you cannot find the ice where it has gone, it has become one with the sea. The sun rises, ice melts, becomes water. Silence arises, the mind, ice-like frozen mind, it starts melting. The ego dissolves. Suddenly there is ocean and you are not. This is the moment of religion. Religion is born in you. Nobody is born in religion. Religion burns in you. You have to become a mother, a womb, for the religion to become pregnant in you, to grow in you. You have to give the birth. You cannot be born in religion. You have to give birth to religion. And then it is beautiful. Then it is something from the unknown. Then it is not concerned with man. That is the meaning of Jesus' virgin birth. The whole meaning is simply this, that a man like Jesus is not born out of man. Religious consciousness is not born out of man. It is born out of the unknown. Mary, Jesus' mother, is virgin. No man has corrupted her. This is a symbolic thing. Not that Jesus is born out of a virgin biologically. Then you miss the metaphor. The beautiful story becomes an ugly doctrine. Then you miss the poetry. And then for centuries Christians have been arguing and trying to prove somehow that Jesus is born really from a virgin mother. How theologians can be so much stupid, it is a wonder. And they go on trying and proving, and very intellectual people, argumentative, but blind. And whenever you miss a poetry and try to create an argument out of it. You destroy religion. You are not a help. You put people off religion. Then whole Christianity becomes absurd, because in the foundation some absurdity. And these are poetic truths, and poetic truths are not logical truths. Logical truths are nothing, they are ordinary facts. Poetic truths are extraordinary facts, so extraordinary in their quality that you cannot make an argument out of them. Argument is too narrow. They need much space. Only a poetic symbology can give that space. This is beautiful poetry. I also say, Jesus is born out of a virgin mother, because there is no other way. Because religious consciousness is uncorrupted by man, untouched. Religious consciousness means you have dropped all that is man-made. Doctrines, dogmas, churches, words, language, prayers, forms, rituals, all that is man-made you have dropped. Then in that silence, God Himself becomes part of you. You become pregnant with the God. You carry the pregnancy. It grows every day. And the more it grows, more alive it becomes. You start feeling that now you have something more valuable than your life. A mother is always ready to die for the child. If there is a crisis and only one can be saved, either the child or the mother is always ready. The child should survive. She is ready to die. There is another parable I would like to tell you. It is said whenever a Buddha is born, the mother dies immediately. That too has created problems for Buddhists, because they say if Mary is alive and has not died and Jesus is born, Jesus cannot be a Buddha. Because whenever an enlightened man is born, the mother dies. Buddha's mother died. Then Mahavir cannot be a Buddha and Krishna cannot be a Buddha, because the first thing is missing. This is how beautiful symbols become ugly. It is beautiful. I don't know whether Buddha's mother died or not. That is irrelevant. Whether she lived or died, that is not the point. But the point is, whenever religious consciousness is born in you, when you are pregnant with Buddhahood, when you are pregnant with enlightenment and you carry enlightenment as a child within you, you will die, because both cannot live. And this is the whole message of this series of talks: until you die, nothing is possible. The mother must die for the child to give birth, because both cannot exist. Because you are the mother and you are the child, you are not two. When you become enlightened, the old must die immediately. If you cling to the old, then you will cripple your enlightenment. If you cling to the old, you will suffocate the child. If you cling too much, the child will be dead before the child is born. Always remember, religion is a poetry, not logic. It is not even philosophy. It It is art. And art is not an argument. Art doesn't bother about argument. Art can seduce you without argument, then why bother about argument? Art is so powerful, it can seduce you without any argument. Argument is needed on the lower realms, where the thing itself is not so powerful to convince you, then argument is needed. When the thing in itself is so powerful, so hypnotic, so transforming, that you are suddenly absorbed into it, there is no need to convince you. I never try to convince you. If you are convinced, good. If you are not convinced, good. But I am not trying to convince you for anything, because conviction is a very ordinary thing. If through argument you are convinced, you will never become religious. You may become philosophical. You may carry a dogma in your head, but you will never become religious. Religion is like love. You fall in it for no reason at all. You cannot prove. Proof is not needed. Proof is needed only when you are thinking for a marriage. Argument is needed only when you are thinking for an arranged marriage. Then you think about the family and the parents of the girl and the money and the dowry and the future possibilities, political relationships, and everything you think about. But when you fall in love, you fall in love. It happens so suddenly, there is no time gap. And the same is with religion. You fall in love with a man who is religious. You cannot prove it. And if somebody argues with you against it, it is very easy to prove something against it. It is almost impossible to prove anything for it. That's why it is a trust, a faith, a deep blindness. But in that deep blindness, for the first time, your inner eye starts functioning. The deep blindness from the outside becomes a deep insight from within. Now, try to understand this story. A disciple came to Maruf Kharki and said, "I have been talking to people about you. Jews claim that you are a Jew. Christians revere you as one of their own saints. Muslims insist that you are the greatest of all Muslims." Maruf answered, "This is what humanity says in Baghdad. When I was in Jerusalem, Jews said that I was a Christian, Muslim that I was a Jew, and Christian that I was a Muslim. What must we think of you then?" said the man. Maruf said, "Some do not understand me and revere me. Others do not either, so they revile me. That is what I have come to say. You should think of me as one who has said this." Now, a disciple came to Maruf Kharki and said, "Maruf Kharki is one of the Sufi masters. And it is said hundreds of people became enlightened through him. He developed many new devices. And he was really a religious man, not belonging to any orthodoxy, not belonging to any convention, not belonging to any tradition. homeless, without any roots, floating like a white cloud. Absolute freedom in his being. A disciple came. The disciple cannot be really a disciple. He must have been a student. In English translations there is trouble, because in English you don't make much distinction between a disciple and a student. You don't make much distinction between a master and a teacher. But in the East, a vast distinction, difference exists between these two terminologies. A teacher can have students, cannot have disciples. A teacher teaches. Of course, a teacher can teach only that which can be taught. Religion cannot be taught. Things about religion can be taught. That is what theology is. Things about God. But God himself cannot be taught. Concepts about God. Theories, whether this right or that. And there are millions of theories. Man has been inventing so many theories about God, that God is completely lost in theories. He has almost become non-substantial. When you utter the word God, no substance is felt in it. It looks like an air bubble, carrying nothing but hot air within. When you say God, no bells ring in the heart. When you say God, it falls flat. It does not carry much significance. The so-called religious thinkers have killed the word completely. They have destroyed the beauty of it. The moment you utter the word God, you put many off. The word carries much violence, ugliness, strife, narrowness of so-called religious people. It has no poetry now. A teacher can teach you everything about God. You can become a doctor living with a teacher. A doctor of divinity, a deity. It is simply unbelievable that things like this exist on earth. People who carry a degree of doctorate about divinity. God is not a theory, it is an experience. You cannot be taught about it. Says Lao Tse, the old boy. The word Lao Tse means the old boy. Another parable. It is said Lao Tse was born old. When he was 84 years of age, for 84 years he lived in the womb of the mother. When he was born, he was already absolutely ancient, all hairs white, wrinkled, what is the meaning? The meaning is that whenever religious consciousness is born, it is always ancient. New and ancient both. That's why Laos is named the old boy. Laos means the old boy. Old yet young. Says Lao Tse, truth cannot be said and all that can be said will not be true. A teacher is one who teaches truth which cannot be taught. He teaches about truth. He goes round and round. He beats the bush around. He never hits the center. And a student is one who is inquiring about God, not desiring God. Who has come to know, not to be. Whose search is intellectual, not total. A student is trying to gather more knowledge. He wants to become more knowledgeable. He wants to accumulate much information. It is said about one of the students of Maruf, he became very famous, the student. He became so famous, then people started coming to him and asking him things, even when Maruf was alive. Even sometimes it will happen, Maruf was sitting there and the student, and people will come not to Maruf but to the student and ask him things. He became so efficient in the scripture. He crammed all the scriptures and he was perfect like a computer. Someday somebody came and he asked a question about some passage in the scripture, and the student recited the holy scripture, then recited all the commentaries that have been done about the scripture. Within minutes, all that was there in the scriptures, he brought it down and he argued this way and that and tried to prove a conclusion. Maruf was sitting and listening. The man was astounded. So much knowledge. He said to Maruf, "You are fortunate to have such disciples. This boy is a rare gem. So much knowledge. I have never come across such a brilliant mind, such a genius. What do you say about him?" Maruf said, "I am always worried. I am worried because he reads too much, and I am worried he has no time to know. His whole time is going in reading, and I am always worried that when he will know, he has no time." A student is concerned not about knowing, he is concerned about knowledge. A teacher attracts students. A master attracts disciples. A disciple is not a student. He has not come to know about God. He has come to become God, to be God. He has not come for more information. He has come for more being. Let me repeat, a disciple asks how to gain more being, and a student asks how to gain more knowledge. He has come to the master to be. And that is a totally different inquiry. The dimension is altogether different. Not only different, it is diametrically opposite. A student goes to the west and a disciple goes to the east. It is said that east and west never meet, I don't know. They must be meeting somewhere because the earth is round. But one thing I know, a student and a disciple never meet. They cannot. Unless a student drops being a student, he cannot become a disciple. It is said about Maruf, whenever a person will come, and thousands were coming to him from distant corners of the world, Maruf has become an institution, a university of being, of course, not of knowledge. Whenever a student or a disciple or a seeker will come to him, the first question Maruf used to ask was this: do you want to learn or unlearn? Do you want to be a student or a disciple? This was his always the first question, because that will decide everything. This man who reached to Maruf must have been a student. He cannot be a disciple, because a disciple is one who has already attained to a trust. A student is seeking. A disciple has come to a conclusion in his being that this is my master. Hence he is the disciple. This is my master. I have come to the man I was seeking. This is my shelter, my refuge. Suddenly the disciple is born. A disciple is born out of this trust. He does not inquire about such things this boy, this man is inquiring. He has fallen in love. He has attained to faith. He has surrendered. A student is not surrendered. He will learn, watch, observe, see. And if he is convinced, and remember, if he is convinced, that is, the conclusion will come out of his head. Just the other day, I was reading a very, very ridiculous thing said by an Indian guru who has become famous in the West, Sri Chinmaya. He teaches in the UN in Geneva. I was always wondering what he will be doing there. And just the other day I came to read a statement he has made. Somebody asked him how to judge and how to find the master. He said, use your brain. Now I know why he is in the UN. Because politicians, stupid people are there. Use your brain. And the thing becomes more and more ridiculous. And then he says, keep in your mind 100 marks to be given. Then you watch whether the master is honest, sincere, true to his word, his morality, his behavior, everything you watch, and go on giving the marks inside the mind. If the master gets 30 marks, he is not for you, you leave. If the master gets near about 80 to 90 marks, then he is your master. This is ridiculous. You will find a teacher, you cannot find a master if you use your brain. Then finally you remain the decisive factor. You decide. Do you know what honesty is? First give marks to yourself, use your brain. Do you know what honesty is? Do you know what morality is? Are you certain what is good and what is bad? Do you know what is evil and what is not evil? First give marks to yourself, use your brain. If you get 30 marks, drop yourself completely. You are useless. And if you can get 80 or 90%, then you don't need a master. You are already a master. You go and seek disciples. To use brain is simply unbelievable. A master is not a commodity in the market. A master by his very being is an unbelievable thing. You cannot use brain. A master by his very being is mysterious. Opposites meet in him. Dichotomies merge in him. Dualisms, he comprehends all of them. You can find a teacher if you use the brain. Then you will be a student. If you use your heart, you can find a master, and then only you can become a disciple. A disciple is in love. And love is always total, not 80%, 90%. Love is total, either it is or it is not. Always total. If it is not, then too total. And there is no compromise in it. Percentage is not possible. Percentage is the way of the brain. Totality is the way of the heart. This man must have been a student. So, let me say, a student came to Maruf Kharki and said, I have been talking to people about you. Must have been using brain. Must have been a student of Sri Chinmay. I have been talking to people about you. You have to encounter a master directly, face to face, eyes to eyes, heart to heart. What nonsense to talk about the master to other people, to know who is this man. Many of you do this same here also. They move around. They talk to people about me. Why not come directly to me? Why waste your time with people? And this is the foolishness of the human mind, that you never know the person you are talking about me. You trust that person and you cannot trust me. Because if you are really a brain-oriented person, then talk about that man to other people. And about those other people to other people. Because first you have to decide about that man whether he is sincere, believable, whatsoever he says about the master, can we take it to be true? You ask A about me. Why not ask about A to B first, and then about B to C? Then you will be in infinite regress. And if the A says something wrong about me, you take it. Now it will be always be a part of you. Or if the A says something good about me, you take it, and that will be a part of you. And that will decide the whole thing. And you never ask about this A, who is this A is. Why go in rounds and circles? There is no end to it. There is only one way: to come to the Master face to face, eyes to eyes, heart to heart. And don't ask anybody else, because then you will carry a prejudice either for or against, and that prejudice will always be in between the Master and you. That will become a barrier. You will always be seeking whether that prejudice is right or wrong. It will color your mind. And any foolish man can prejudice your mind. You are so unaware that any man, the taxi driver that brings you to the ashram, he can corrupt your mind. You can ask about me, and many of you must have asked the taxi drivers. Because the mind goes on seeking information, what others are saying, and they must be knowing. You must ask the neighbors here, they must be knowing. And they are the last person in the world to know about me. Neighbors, they cannot know. Jesus has two sayings. One saying he says, love your enemies just as you love yourself. And second, love your neighbors just as you love yourself. It seems enemies and the neighbors are the same person. This man must have been an ordinary inquirer. He said, I have been talking to people about you. Jews claim that you are a Jew. Christians revere you as one of their own saints. Muslims insist that you are the greatest of all Muslims. He must have met the disciples, the people who have fallen in love with the Master. Maruf lived near Baghdad. Baghdad became a capital of religious consciousness when Maruf was alive. He must have met the disciples. Those who have already fallen in love. If the disciple is a Jew, he will say, my Master is the most perfect Jew possible. I have many Jews here, and they know that I am the most perfect Jew. Once you are in love, whatsoever is beautiful, great to you, you project on the Master. I have in my disciples almost all sorts of people belonging to all sorts of religion: Jews, Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jains, Buddhists. They all think, if a Buddhist comes to me and falls in love with me, he will think that I am the most essential Buddhist, and he will find everything which will convince him that this is true. Maruf answered, this is what humanity says in Baghdad. That means my disciples, my people, my community people. You should have been in Jerusalem. This is what humanity says in Baghdad. That is my community people, my people. When I was in Jerusalem, Jews said that I was a Christian. Muslims that I was a Jew. And Christians that I was a Muslim. Enemies. And for a religious man to find enemies, the best places are Jerusalem, Kaaba, Kasi. These are the best places to find the enemies, because these are the sectarian strongholds. Kasi for Hindus, Jerusalem for Jews, Kaaba for Muslims. These are the sectarian strongholds, fortresses, where the fossilized religion is protected and saved, where the dead body is continuously decorated, painted for believers to deceive them that the body is not dead, where religion is continuously modified to suit new situations so that there is no need to drop it, where a dead continuity is continued, there is the problem. If you want to find antagonistic people to a religious man, go to these sacred places, holy places. In fact, they are the unholiest in the world. They have to be. Because the dead corpse of religion stinks. Can you find a more dirty place than Kasi in the world? Everything stinks of dead religion. But if you are a believer, then you don't listen to your senses. You don't listen to your own consciousness. You go on seeing things which are not there. You go on projecting things which are not there. Said Maruf, this is what humanity says in Baghdad. When I was in Jerusalem, just the opposite was the case. Everybody was saying that I don't belong to them. I am the enemy. Jews thought I was a Muslim, the enemy. Muslim thought I was a Jew, the enemy. Christians thought I was a Muslim, the enemy. And all these three religions, nobody was ready even to accept me in their fold. Religious persons cannot be accepted in any fold. They can be accepted only in the loving heart, but in no organization. They cannot be accepted because organizations have no hearts. A religious man cannot be absorbed in any establishment. Only a personal feeling, a loving heart, can become a shrine for him. The man must have been puzzled now, because he had come to inquire who he is. Perhaps the man was a Muslim, and he wanted to be convinced that this Maruf is a Muslim so that he can follow him. The man may have been a Jew and he wanted to be convinced that this Maruf is a Jew so that he can follow him. You follow yourself. You never follow any master. If you are here because I say things which you already know are right, then you are not with me. Then I am only voicing your own mind. If you are here because you see me in me a jaina, because you are a jaina, and when I talk about Mahavir, I can immediately say, count how many jains are there. Their eyes simply change. Their backbones become straight. They look very intense. Now for the first time, they are alert. Otherwise, they were falling asleep. If I talk about Jews, I can count immediately how many Jews are there. And if I cannot decide who you are, then only you are with me. Because if you are a Jew, and you listen to me, and you feel that whatsoever I am saying is what Jewish religion is, then you remain a Jew. I am just a support for your convictions. Just an outside support. I have not entered you. You have not allowed me to enter in you. Many people come to me and they say, whatsoever you said was beautiful, because this is what I have believed my whole life, and you said it better than I can say. So that's all. He is finished with me, and I am finished with him. There has been no meeting. He has listened his own voice into my voice. He has interpreted his own mind. And he remains a believer of his own ego. He has not dropped even a bit of his old luggage. Rather, on the contrary, now he is more convinced of the old luggage, and he will carry it with more strength and with more conviction. No, remember this, I am not here to make you a Jew or a Hindu or a Christian. No, I am here only to make you a religious man. The man must have been puzzled. What must we think of you then? Said the man. You have puzzled me. You confuse me. All religious people are in a way confusing. They create a chaos in you. Because first you have to be uprooted. First you have to be demolished. No religious person is interested in renovating you. Because howsoever renovated, you will remain the old, the dead thing. Modified, of course, but not fresh and young. A religious person is interested to demolish you completely, to pull you down to the very roots, and then to help you arise again. Until you die, nothing is possible. A master is a death. On the one hand, resurrection on the other. A master is a crucifixion, a cross. As you are, you die, and as you should be, is born. The man was puzzled. He said, what must we think of you then? Said the man. Maruf said, some do not understand me. Listen to these words. Very significant. Some do not understand me and revere me. They do not understand, hence they revere. People are really foolish. If they don't understand a thing, they start revering it. because they think there must be something very mysterious. When I cannot understand, I, such an intelligent and a genius man, when I cannot understand, there must be something very, very deep and mysterious. And many people exploit such attitude. Many people, if you read Hegel's books, you will find what he is doing. He goes on trying to make everything as difficult as possible. It is not difficult. It is a good exercise to study Hegel, a German philosopher, in his own day, thought to be the greatest. But as time passes, he comes again and again lower and lower and lower. Because as you understand him, his mystery is lost. And nothing is there, just verbiage. If he can say a thing in a single word, he will use 100 pages. If he can say a thing in one sentence, he will go on and on, round and round, into pages. You will not be able, he writes long sentences, sometimes one sentence in one page. You will not be capable to remember the beginning of the sentence when you reach to the end. You will have to read again and again. And he mystifies. And there are many people, mystifiers, exploiting the human stupidity of the belief that whatsoever you cannot understand must be something superb, of the sublime, of the unknown, of the mysterious. These people are exploiters. Just the reverse is the case with people who are really wise. They speak in short sentences. Their sentences are not complicated. They are simple. Whatsoever they say can be understood by anybody who is normally intelligent. They don't mystify. Whatsoever they teach is very, very simple. Simple as life is simple. Simple as existence is simple. Rivers and mountains are simple. Words and trees are simple. Wise men are simple. But the more you understand them, and to understand them is simple. But the more you understand them, the deeper you penetrate in their simplicity, you find new dimensions, opening of mysteries. Their words are simple, but what they want to indicate is mysterious. Their indication is simple, but the indicated is mysterious. Look at my finger, a simple thing. And I indicate with my finger to the moon. The moon is mysterious, not the finger. The finger is a very simple phenomenon. Nothing to talk about it. Words are like fingers, and they point, the finger indicate towards the mysterious. Some do not understand me and revere me. And you have revered many people, and you have revered many doctrines just because you cannot understand them. There are many followers of Gurdjieff. Because they cannot understand him, they follow him. Gurdjieff is not like Hegel. He is not mystifying, but he has something else to do. He does not want unwanted people to come near him. So he writes in such a way that unless you are very patient, you will not be able to penetrate into him. He is not difficult. He is simple. But the methodology is that he puts you off. You cannot read more than few pages. I have not come across a single person yet who has read his all and everything completely. People have gone through it, but and he knew it, that this is going to be so. He writes in a tedious style. He bores you. And this is a very considered method. He puts you off. When first time the book All and Everything was published, the pages were not cut. Only the introductory pages, 100 pages were cut, and other pages were not cut. And there was a note on the book that if you can read the 100 pages, then open the others, otherwise return the book back to the sir and take your money back. First try with the 100 pages, and if you are still interested, then open other pages, cut them. Otherwise, don't destroy the book. And many books were returned back. Many were not returned. That doesn't mean that people read them. They were just curious. They thought maybe it is a trick. Only in the introductory pages, he is boring. Inside he may not be. But if you cut, then you cannot return the book. But I have not come across a single person who has read the whole book thoroughly. People skip. Then they miss. Because here and there he hides the diamonds. And everything else just is a camouflage. Here and there, in the bushes of words, he hides the diamonds. Those diamonds can be sorted out and can be written on a postcard. And that book is 1,000 pages. Many people follow Gurdjieff because they cannot understand. Suddenly, when you cannot understand, you feel there is some mystery. It is not so. Truth is very simple. Everybody has the capacity to understand it. Truth is as simple as anything can be. You have to be just silent, understanding, ready. And it is revealed to you. Maruf said, some do not understand me, hence their reverence. And others do not either, so they revile me. Then there are people, if they cannot understand, they cannot believe that there can exist anything which they cannot understand. Then they revile. It is against their egos. But remember, both are the egoistic viewpoints. One ego thinks, I am so understanding. If I cannot understand, then there must be something mysterious. Another ego says, if I cannot understand, then there cannot be anything at all. This man is simply deceptive. There is nothing. If there was anything, then how come I cannot understand it? A genius like me will understand everything. Both are egoistic standpoints, and one has to drop out of the both. Only then you can understand a master. One has to drop out of both. Don't revere a thing because you don't understand. Don't revile it because you don't understand. In fact, don't refer the thing to your ego. Don't bring it in the context of your ego. That is useless. You just listen to the thing. If you cannot understand, try to understand. Meditate more. Contemplate more. Become more silent. Come to it again and again from different standpoints. and finally come to it with no standpoint at all, you will understand and the mystery will be revealed. If you cannot understand, don't start reviling it, because you are not the last word of understanding. You are not the last capacity of understanding. You are not the omega of understanding. You are just a beginner on the first rung of the ladder. And the ladder is vast and big. Millions of things are waiting for you to be. You are just on the door. You have not even entered the shrine. Maybe just on the steps, or maybe just on the path, not even come up to the steps, not even on the door. Don't bring your ego in either way. You are not the deciding factor whether it is mysterious or nothing. You listen. The more you listen to a man who has attained, the more and more you will understand. And the more you will understand, the more it will become mysterious. And the mystery of life is not something which can be solved or which is ever solved. It has to be lived. It is not a problem to be solved. It has to be lived. The more you know, the less you feel that you know. The more you know, the more you feel the unknown surrounds you from everywhere. And in the final moment of knowing, all knowledge drops. You know nothing. That final moment of knowing is like vast ignorance, a vast dark night. But only out of that dark night, the morning is born. Out of this vast ignorance, a light arises, which is knowing, which is understanding, which Buddha calls prajna, sambodhi, what Patanjali calls samadhi, the enlightenment. Marup said, some do not understand me and revere me, others do not either, so they revile me. That is what I have come to say. You should think of me as one who has said this. The man was asking to label Maruf somehow, whether he is a Jew or a Mohammedan or a Christian. Once labeled, you think you have understood. Labeling is a trick. You label a certain thing and you feel you have understood. I show you a flower, an outlandish flower you have never seen, and immediately you ask, what is the name? Why you are so much anxious to know the name? How the name is going to help you? X, Y, Z, whatsoever may be the name, how is it is going to help you? No, if I say X, you think now you know it. You have labeled it. Now you can show to your child that this is X flower. You have become a knower. What have you known about the flower? Just the word X. I could have called it Y or Z. They were as relevant as X. How do you know it? I was reading Gutfried Stein's book. When she said in a poem, a rose is a rose is a rose, it became world famous. She goes on that way with many things. She does not define. She doesn't say anything. A rose is a rose is a rose. Nothing is defined. Nothing is said really. Somebody asked Why you have said this? We all know a rose is a rose is a rose. It makes no sense. It aids nothing to our knowledge. Stein said, because poets have been talking about roses for millennia, millions of poetries about roses, and everybody has read them and sung them, and everybody has repeated, the word rose has lost its rosiness. It doesn't say anything anymore. That's why I had to repeat, a rose is a rose is a rose, so that you are awakened out of your sleep, so that you are sickened a little what this woman is saying. The absurdity of it, a rose is a rose is a rose. You may listen, otherwise a rose, who listens? Everybody knows. And she said, repeating this, I have brought the redness to the rose again. Words can't say much. And if you think that just knowing the names and labels you have known, you will miss everything. Try to avoid words. Don't try to label. You immediately label. Labeling is such a great disease. It is an obsession. You see a man, you say beautiful. You see a woman and you say ugly. Why in such a hurry? Wait. The woman has many faces. Even the ugliest woman sometimes have a beautiful face. No beautiful woman can compete. Ugliest I have seen. Ugliest woman in a certain posture, in a certain mood, in a certain climate, is so beautiful that your Miss Universe will look a little paler before her. And I have seen the most beautiful woman ugly in certain moods. Wait, don't label, otherwise your label will not allow you to see the reality. Even beautiful women in anger, in jealousy, in possessiveness become so ugly, and their ugliness is deeper than the ordinary ugliness of a body. Their ugliness is spiritual and inner, and it comes all over their body like a rash. When a woman is jealous and possessive, she may be beautiful on the surface, but something emanates around her, poisonous, snake-like. She is ugly. You touch her in that moment, and you will feel that you have touched a reptile, not a woman. Poisonous. Fumes coming out of her of poison. Don't label. Reality doesn't believe in labels. Reality goes on moving and changing. It is a flux, a river. You cannot step twice in the same river. Not even once. It is moving all the time. Don't categorize. And you have pigeon holes in the mind. Immediately something and you put it in a pigeon hole and finished. And you think you know. This man is good and that man is bad. Have you not ever observed bad becoming good, good becoming bad? Have you not seen an honest thief? Have you not seen a very, very sincere criminal? Have you never seen a sinner but holy? categories don't belong to life, they belong to the mind. Categories are your game. Don't categorize. And this man had come to ask Maruf, how to categorize you, where to put? Maruf is an alive man. If he was dead, he would have said, I am a Mohammedan, of course. A humble Muslim, a Sufi, but he is not a dead man. He won't allow categorization. He is alive, utterly alive. He says, you remember me, only this, nothing else. That is what I have come to say. You should think of me as one who has said this. Just this much you remember, that those who don't understand me, they revere me. And those who don't understand me, they revile me. In Jerusalem, Jews think I am a Muslim, and Muslims that I am a Jew. And in Baghdad, where people are in love with me, in my community, Jews think I am the most perfect Jew. Christians, that I am a reborn Christ. And Muslims, that I am the last word in being a Muslim. More I will not say. This much I say to you. And if you want how to remember me, you can only do this. You should think of me as one who has said this. He remains uncategorized, unlabeled. He does not give any clue. Rather, he becomes more mysterious. The man may have come with something, some prejudice, some idea about this master Maruf. He has demolished his mind completely. He has cut through all his prejudices. He has left him in the vacuum. That is what a master does, leaves you in emptiness. But that is the most beautiful gift that can be given to you. Nothingness, emptiness, vacuum. In that vacuum arises all. In that nothingness arises all. In that emptiness, the absolute is born. But until you die, that's not possible. You are here, let me be your death and resurrection and resurrection. Enough for today.